Amina is an activist during the Arab Spring. Her blog, Gay Girl in Damascus, attracts readers from around the world. When she's mysteriously abducted, her followers mobilize, desperate to save her. What they find shocks them. I'm Samira Moyeddin, the host of Gay Girl Gone, a new 6-part series from CBC. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hey there, I'm Rosemary Barton.
And I'm El Amin Abdul Mahmoud.
And this is Party Lines.
And we are hearing that word again this week, Rosie. There is lots of talk of reopening. Several provinces that have been under really tight restrictions since the end of last year are starting to get a little loose, loosen things up a little bit. But reopening this time around involves a brand new challenge. How do we do this safely when variants of concern are being detected right across the country?
Okay, good one. I want to talk about the Senate. You remember that place? Red Chamber, lots of people inside, specifically a fellow named Senator Mike Duffy.
Yes.
And he's hoping that the Supreme Court will hear his appeal to launch a multi-million dollar lawsuit against the actual Senate itself. Lots to talk about from a sort of blast from the past kind of story.
Well, then let's get there.
Let's do it.
Okay, Rosie, I'm weary and very tired because the day that we record this, I went back and I counted, and it has been 79 days since I got a haircut because Toronto has been in lockdown.
We are back to where we started.
We're back to where we started. And I think it's important to start with this, mostly because I want to talk about my pain and suffering, but also because I think it applies to everybody else's pain and suffering. So Toronto has been in lockdown since November. Only essential businesses are open. That is not the only place that has been so. It's been so many different places across the country who have been tightening restrictions. Quebec went into curfew mode in December. Alberta has been gradually tightening restrictions until we got to January, and it was sort of a lockdown situation. Manitoba, New Brunswick, everywhere. And it was a tough December and January, to say the least. But as of this week, we are singing a different tune. We are listening to provincial governments everywhere, essentially, start talking about how it's time to not get loose, per se, but, like, just relax a little bit. Just be a bit more chill. Which is, I mean, it is bewildering to read these news stories because, like, there are words that I haven't thought about in a long time. Words like theaters and indoor dining. Like, Quebec has a bunch of regions where you're allowed to resume indoor dining there. You can get a haircut. I cannot still. That's fine. If you're in places in the orange zone in Quebec, theaters will open. Like, do you remember theaters?
I don't even know what that means. I don't even know what that word means.
Everything about that experience. Nova Scotia, businesses can start rocking 75% capacity, pretty significant. You can go to events now in Nova Scotia, up to 100 people inside. This includes anything from faith gatherings to bingo halls. Alberta has indoor dining back. Please have some chicken tenders for me because I can't have them at a restaurant. Ontario, its stay-at-home order is going to be extended for a bit for most of the province, but that is only until next week. So a lot of non-essential businesses can start reopening at 25% capacity. For a few health units, they're going to be allowed to just reopen, return to the green zone. That includes my hometown, Kingston. Shout out Kingston. Shout out medical officer, Dr. Kieran Moore. Anyway, all of this is to say there is a lot of movement on reopening, which is big, but it's also coming at a time when concern about the variance is so high. Mm-hmm. So here's Dr. Teresa Tam talking about all of this reopening business.
I think what my concern is that right now, if we release some of these measures, that a resurgence will occur, but that resurgence could be due to one of these variants, and then it will be much more difficult to control.
So Dr. Tam is warning about a consequence of all this reopening that could be worse than the situation we're in. And yet every day I'm reading these stories about what the reopening is going to look like across the country. What are you making in all of this?
Well, so I teased you off the top because, of course, during the beginning of the pandemic, one of your concerns, not your main concern, one of your personal concerns was your hair. Yes. I, too, have had to take matters into my own hands and just had to dye those roots, baby. Like, it was, I'm not ready to be old on TV yet. So here I am.
Yes.
On a more serious note, though, as we cope with the restrictions our own way, it is pretty startling to see all these measures start to be lifted. I wouldn't say that there's anyone being irresponsible about it. Certainly, we know a lot about what we're dealing with. And the Premier of Ontario, for instance, has said, if we see that things are not going well, we'll swoop in and lock it down again. But let me give us some facts around the variants that are troubling, to say the least. The number of cases linked to any of the three identified variants, all three of those variants, the one that originated in the United Kingdom, the one that originated in South Africa, the one that originated in Brazil, all are present in this country, although the one that started in the United Kingdom is the most prevalent. The number of those cases has doubled in the last week. The variants have been found now in 7 out of 10 provinces of this country. But mm-hmm. the worst provinces, as we record this, in terms of number of cases, is in Ontario, where there's more than 200 cases, more than 70 cases in Alberta. And Dr. Tam and others have said, listen, there's probably more than that out there, because not every province is testing every positive case to see if it's a variant. Ontario is moving really quickly in that direction. The reason that these variants are so concerning is primarily because they seem to be far more contagious than what we were already dealing with. So scientists say that anything other than a, quote, transient exposure to the variant that originated in the UK is high risk. So that means, you know, you might not just touch a surface and get it, but you could be in front of someone who has a mask for more than 10 minutes and you somehow might catch mm-hmm. it. And that's where it becomes difficult to contain and difficult to understand maybe why we would be moving so quickly to lift restrictions in so many parts of the country where this is happening. I mean, we should be at a place now where we can control, trace, contain, all those things. And yet we now have a situation where, yeah, we can test for COVID, but then we have to take that test and test again to see if it's one of these highly contagious variants.
Right. I think one of the pieces of information that people have been paying the closest attention to has just been the total number of cases. Mm-hmm. And on that front, we've been seeing a lot of really good news,
yes,
right? Like
yeah.
Alberta's seeing the lowest numbers it's seen since probably October. In Ontario, I'm relieved to see the numbers begin with a 1 again, as yeah. in like it's 1,000 something as opposed to 3,000 something. It's just been a bit of a relief. And so, as you mentioned off the top there, like nobody's saying that this is irresponsible in terms of the numbers and indicators that we have. But I guess what I'm curious about is this pattern and cycle of opening and then closing down,
yeah.
opening and then closing
yeah.
down again. Because at a certain point, wouldn't it be easier to remain shut down until we have no such further worries, or at least until the vaccine rollout is going faster? And I understand the economic consequences of remaining shut down for too long. But at the same time, doesn't it make this harder for the government itself to get people to buy into a lockdown again after entering a lockdown, selling people on the importance of that lockdown? If all these provinces have to shut down again, there is going to be a political cost to this. There's going to be consequences for those governments as people look to them and say, well, if we have to shut down again now, why did you reopen so early? And why are we not reopening now so we can have a longer reopen?
Yeah, I think lockdowns and another lockdown are increasingly soul-crushing, frankly. Like, you
yes.
know, you get a little taste of freedom, even if you're not out there. I haven't eaten in a restaurant since this started. But even
yeah.
if you're not out eating in a restaurant and going to the movies, you know, you and I were joking on Twitter the other day about just, like, buying crap at Winners. Like,
yeah.
you know, like, even
yes.
if it just that gives you a little, oh, my life. So I agree with you. Like, I think another lockdown becomes hard to get people to buy into every time. But provinces are dealing with, like, the push and pull of that, the push and pull of the economy, small businesses shutting down and suffering, the realization that we are in a sprint to vaccines, and the vaccines aren't coming as quickly as we need them to come, although next week we're going to start to see some big, big numbers, hundreds of thousands of doses arriving.
Yes.
But the other thing that I think is missing from this, and the Prime Minister keeps talking about it at every press conference, sort of subtly, are rapid tests. He said again this week, the federal government has sent almost 20 million rapid tests to provinces. So these could be used. They are not the end all and be all, for sure. But these could be used as another sort of layer of protection. They could be used in schools. They could be used in workplaces. They could be used in congregate living centers. And for some reason, the provinces are not yet using them. I think they've only used something like 3 million of them. So it seems to me like there's a whole bunch of things that need to start happening all at once to make sure that we don't have to go back to these very brutal lockdowns again, whether it be rapid testing, more vaccines, better contact tracing, all those things. And it's odd to me that there doesn't seem to be a concerted effort in that direction. You know what I mean?
Totally. And the thing that I'm trying to grapple with is that right now we are in this wait for that, for those big numbers of vaccines to start arriving.
Yeah.
So wouldn't it be more, even politically, even if it wasn't about, you know, the mood of people, wouldn't it be more politically prudent to wait until that is in play to start this reopening process? Because the story that you get to tell Canadians right now is we're ready for this reopen. And if you have to shut down again in 3 weeks, if you have to shut down again in a month, it's going to be a much harder wait. And then we'll be maybe a month away from that sort of mass vaccination period. And so I just don't understand the calculus behind this. Having said that, I'm happy for the places that are reopening. Congratulations. Please go eat a sandwich at a restaurant and then head straight home.
Hey, my name's Jamie Poisson, and I'm the host of Front Burner. It's the CBC's daily news podcast. And every day, we're discussing the big events and fault lines shaping Canada and the world. Politics, economics, social movements, you name it. Sometimes we even talk about really fun stuff, like the enduring relevance of Lord of the Rings. You can hear Front Burner on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
So for a period of my life, I guess starting from 2013 all the way up to 2016, I want to say, I spent a lot of time talking and researching and worrying about senators' expenses. And during that period of time, for 62 days, not 62 days all in a row, but 62 days, I sat on a very hard wooden bench every day and listened to the Crown try and make the case against Senator Mike Duffy. But before we get into what that case was all about and how much of my life it consumed, let me tell you why we're talking about it today. Because, yeah, it all happened a long time ago. But today, on Thursday, we are expecting to hear from the Supreme Court on a case that Mike Duffy has launched, a $7.8 million case seeking reimbursement and damages from the Senate and the RCMP. He's taken it through lower courts. Now he's brought it all the way up to the Supreme Court in hopes that they will hear his case. But I'll remind you how we got here, maybe. At the time, he was charged with 31 counts against him for, you know, not for not claiming expenses correctly, fraud, and a variety of other things that stemmed from an investigation in the Senate that said that he was, in short, like I'll make it really short, that he was wrongly claiming expenses because he was not living in his primary residence of PEI. In fact, his primary residence was here in Ottawa. The Senate at the time found these expenses to be irregular and wrong, and they suspended him for 2 years. But this went on to become a criminal trial because the RCMP investigated, and they found that they wanted to bring fraud charges against Duffy. They also, you might remember, found that Duffy had accepted a check for $90,000 from Stephen Harper's former chief of staff, Nigel Wright, in order to pay back the Senate. And that's where, like, the political bombshell went off and all hell broke loose. And there's a picture of me on the front of the Ottawa Citizen chasing after Nigel Wright down the street. And anyway, that time goes on. And in fact, Senator Duffy was cleared on all these charges. The judge in that case found that he had sought advice for how to claim the expenses, was given advice by Prime Minister Harper, that he didn't wrongfully try to defraud the system. And the judge at the time actually even went after the Crown attorneys to say that they had not done a good job and the investigators had not done a good job. Fast forward to today, Thursday, the day this podcast drops, the Supreme Court of Canada is going to decide if it will hear an appeal from Senator Duffy, who is currently seeking $7.8 million in reimbursement and damages from the Senate and the RCMP for reputational damage and for expenses that he lost because he wasn't paid over those 2 years. Okay, now your turn. Mm-hmm.
Well, honestly, what I saw when I saw, first of all, I can't give that detailed background just off the top of my head like that. That's incredible. When I saw that Mike Duffy was back in the news, I sort of had an Obi-Wan Kenobi moment of, I haven't heard that name in a long time. Like, it's just been so long that I just, one, I forgot that Mike Duffy is the current senator from PEI. And also, I forgot that he was charged, let alone acquitted on all those charges. And, you know, this story has been around for so long that, like, it broke the year I got married. I am now a father of a child. Like, this is the journey that this story has sort of taken. It's just been a really long time. And all the details of it kind of add up to this larger picture. And the larger picture is what's interesting to me because it became a story about your conception of government. Like, no matter how well or not well you know the story, it became this kind of Rorschach test for how you see the machinery of government. Because it sort of became like first of all, it was a lot of people's entry point into understanding Senate expenses and how senators have expenses that they are allowed to claim and whether you think that's fair or not. It really came down to like how much you believe in the institution. Mm-hmm. But I think like the larger point of it is that if you were already inclined to see the Senate as a body that like, do we really need this? What do these people do? Why are they not elected? It just became such a perfect focal point that said everything you needed to say about the government itself. Even though it really was a story about Mike Duffy and his relationship with the PMO, it just became this entry point into how you feel about the Senate.
Yeah, and it caused a lot of damage, I think, to the Senate writ large and to Senator Duffy, to be fair. And that's what his claim says, is that it was reputational damage, that he claims the Senate is liable for malicious prosecution, malfeasance in public office. He talks about his own the toll this took on him emotionally and physically, whether it be anxiety, depression, alienation of family and friends, because certainly a lot of people just stopped talking to him in light of what this trial produced. But you're right that it is ultimately about senators, their role, what the Senate should be doing. But it's an even bigger story than that when it comes to this particular claim and how the Supreme Court will rule on whether they even want to hear this case on Thursday, because it puts into question this notion of whether Parliament is supreme. And by that, I mean, Parliament actually has its own system. It functions sort of independently of the court system. And the two lower courts have agreed with that notion, that if courts start to get involved with how the Senate runs itself, who it decides to suspend or punish, then you run the risk of courts getting in the way of the Senate's ability to function as a legislative body. And I know that sounds, you know, super processy and maybe nerdy, but it's actually really important to keep all those things separate. So as I said, those two lower courts have found that already. And on Thursday, the Supreme Court will have to say, okay, we're willing to hear this case, or we're not, because we just agree with that. that. But if they say we're willing to hear it, it does open up these questions around how far the House of Commons, the Senate can go in policing itself. And there is an importance to that. I know it sounds a little bit crazy, but that's really what Senator Duffy and his lawyers are trying to make this about, because he does think that he was a scapegoat and that the Senate went way beyond what they were actually allowed to do when it came to him.
We should also put in context that the Supreme Court, like, for the most part, rejects applications. Like, for the most part, they reject applications of cases that come forward. So for them to take a case, it really has to be something that demonstrates a conflict in the law and a mm-hmm. conflict in an area of the law that has not yet been answered. And this is part of Duffy's argument. Duffy's lawyer's argument is that we haven't yet had to decide how far the Senate is allowed to go or how far the House is allowed to go in terms of deciding based on their own parliamentary privilege what can they determine to be the right kind of punishment. That is interesting, and it's going to be interesting to see how the Supreme Court rules, because just deciding that Duffy has a case, even if they end up ruling ultimately against him, is kind of an interesting test of the institutions that we have.
Yeah, and I think you're right. That's super important to remember. And if it was going to sort of blow things wide open, it'll be a huge story. I think it's, given what the lower courts have decided, unlikely. But it's probably also worth reminding people here that Senator Duffy is about to reach retirement age from the Senate. He's going to turn 75 in May. And then he no longer has a salary. He no longer has that job. And this is really probably for him his last attempt to not only try and rebuild his reputation, but also to try and get some of that money back that he believes he lost over that period of time. You might think that's the sound of drinking, but no, that's... You and I, traipsing through Winners, buying glassware and beautifully smelling candles.
Yes.
Just anything.
Just the little knickknacks.
Just
anything from Winners.
For $6.99 going into our basket. Okay, it's also the sound, though, of last call. And last week we asked you this one. Are you concerned about Canada's supply of COVID vaccines?
People had feelings about this one. One person said, they're not worried about the vaccine rollout and not mad at the government. I get that everyone is going as fast as they can. Hopefully we'll pick up soon. Very understanding of you. Another said, we were told that the first quarter would be slow. There is shortage globally of vaccine at the present time. We have to be patient.
That's a lot of understanding people. Here's what someone else tweeted. My concern is that Trudeau's continued promise that everyone who wants a vaccine by September will get it will not happen, and we will be on the receiving end of yet another apology.
In that vein, another person wrote, let's just all take a second to remember some other times Justin Trudeau promised to do something by a particular date and brought up the Liberals' commitment to end all long-term drinking water advisories in Indigenous communities by 2021, which a government acknowledged in December they will not be able to do. And I'll share one last response from a listener. I'm less concerned about Canadian vaccine supply and more concerned with global vaccine supply. We don't get out of this until we all get out of this.
Okay. How Canadian of that person.
Yes.
This week we want to know this one. Do you feel comfortable with loosening restrictions where you live? Because everyone's dealing with different levels of that. So how are you feeling about what's happening where you are? You can tweet us. I'm at Rosie Barton.
And I'm at Elamine88. Please throw in the hashtag. The hashtag is Party Lines, and let us know what you think.
And that is it for Party Lines this week from CBC News and CBC Podcasts. I'm Rosemary Barton, Chief Political Correspondent for CBC News.
And I'm Elamine Abdul Mahmoud, Chief Winners Correspondent and Culture Writer for BuzzFeed News.
I knew you were going to say that. All right, see you back here next week.
You bet.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.